In a COL movie's first, Jeff and Ray run the show alone while Steve sends in his thoughts. The boys give their thoughts on the Sylvester Stallone classic Demolition Man, then head to the theater to check out the Tom Hanks and Julia Roberts flick Larry Crown. They wrap up the show with a review of the tribute trailer of the Americanized David Fincher version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. All this and news about changes to Netflix, how Harry Potter may be linked to a remake of Stephen King's The Stand, as well as new images from Captain America. It's the 61st reel of COL Movies. Mellow greetings. What seems to be your boggle?
The past.
You telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The future.
Hi. Welcome to the future.
And I'm telling you, it's great here.
You're listening to COL Movies.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. This is reel number 61. I am Jeff, and I would like to introduce my maniacal co-host, Ray.
It's so weird to be here in the same room with you again.
Yes. Unfortunately, we do not have our good friend Steven on the Skype line today. Hopefully, he'll be recording something to put in. If anything, he'll at least put in his reactions to the movies we're going to be talking about today into the show notes. So feel free to check the website. At this point in time, I don't know what I'm going to have, so I don't know where I'm going to put everything. So somewhere around here, hopefully you will hear Steven.
Hey guys, it's Steve. Sorry I couldn't be with you tonight. Unfortunately, I had some things come up and ended up having to stay at work tonight. Ugh. But it's that time of year. I hope that the show goes great and you guys enjoyed being in cahoots with one another tonight. But believe me, you're going to hear what I have to say about these movies. So if it's not in line, too bad. But enjoy it, and I look forward to being with you at next week's show. Thanks, guys. Bye.
We miss you, Steve.
We really do. All right, with that, let's start off with a little bit of news.
News on the mark!
In the news, we start off with a very, what the fuck, yeah, is what I would say on this. Netflix to offer new unlimited DVD plans, and we'll separate the streaming and DVD plans. So if you get one DVD plus unlimited streaming, you need to pay for unlimited streaming and one DVD.
Yeah, previously you were able to hop on their unlimited streaming plan of $7.99, and it was only $2, I think, extra to get one
DVD.
Yeah,
it was like $9.99, $10.99. That's the plan that I'm on.
That's the plan that I'm on, too. So
all of a sudden, we're paying $5 more.
60% increase. Who does a 60% increase in this economy? Really?
Now, to be fair, I mean, they're just basically splitting it up, so it means that if you want the streaming and the DVD, you have to buy both plans. Mm-hmm. And they do say it's $15.98. They flat out say it, and that's exactly $7.99 twice. So
yeah, looks like pretty much I'm probably going to end up switching to just the DVDs, because unless they like improve their streaming selection a whole heck of a lot, I can't see paying that much for
them. and the what's on streaming is also usually available for DVD as well, so
yeah,
you don't have to really worry about that. So it's just, you know, timing thing for most things.
I'm trying to figure out what their end game here is. I'm wondering if are they trying to push people in one direction or the other, and trying to see, like, do more people pick the, you know, of all the people that are right now on the $9.99 a month thing, do most people go one direction or the other, or do most people say they're willing to pay for both? I have a feeling that you're going to have a great deal of people that are just pissed off and are going to dump it. You know, I use Netflix mostly for this show, so it's not something I can easily get rid of, especially for some of the older movies that we review here that aren't easily found to purchase or streaming elsewhere. So they have an unmatched collection of actual DVDs available to send out. So on that front, they're hard to compete with. So I might just have to go that route and you know, just plan my DVDs out really well that are coming and going. So,
you know, with the Amazon selection, working on their selection of unlimited streaming for their Amazon Prime, mm-hmm. where, you know, with the Amazon Prime, the big thing is that the free 2-day shipping, that, you know, that's going to save people money who want 2-day shipping on their whatever products they're buying in general. Right. But getting the unlimited streaming, as long as they can beef up theirs. You know, right now I'm paying for both. I've got my Amazon Prime subscription, and I've got my Netflix subscription. Mm-hmm. Right now, overall, I'm going to be paying $5 more because I still watch a ton of Netflix streaming.
Right.
And if I can't get it on there and it's something I want now, I go to Amazon. And if Amazon doesn't even have it for the unlimited streaming, but they have it for regular rentals, I'll probably even just opt for that. So I could just switch over to unlimited streaming, but because of their DVD selection, mm-hmm. I'm sticking with the DVD, but I do want to keep the streaming. I'm just a streamer guy.
Yeah, I mean, I see, you know, sometime in the future, I think everything is going to be streamed. You know, physical media is probably going to go away eventually. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're quite ready, though. For one thing, I don't think network speeds are quite up to handling the task of streaming video, especially as more and more people want 720 and 1080p video streamed to their house. It takes a lot more bandwidth than I think the networks are currently set up to handle.
Then you also have the new bandwidth caps that companies are putting into place.
Yeah.
That if people are constantly streaming stuff, whatever they're watching.
Right.
That's going to eat away at their bandwidth cap. Sure, most of the time that's actually is relatively negligible, but the more and more just really adds up.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. I, for the first time last month, actually exceeded my 250 gigabyte download cap from Comcast, so it is possible to bust that wide open, and I'm not a person who, like, torrents a ton of stuff or anything. It's just...
Well, and then I also play WoW, so that can eat up a bit. Depending on what's going on.
Yeah, take a look at if you want us to get something funny, take a look at Netflix's Facebook page. There's a lot of angry people on there making comments, and there's a lot of comments getting deleted. Netflix, I don't think, can keep up with the amount of vitriol that's being sent towards them right now on the internet. So it's gonna be this is sort of Netflix opened themselves up to a PR nightmare, I think.
Yeah, it just popped on there. It says, "We are separating our unlimited streaming plan from our DVD plan offerings. The streaming only plan will remain at $7.99, while we now offer DVD only plans starting at $7.99. Mm-hmm. Additional details regarding our changes can be found in our blog. View all comment all 63,233 comments.
Trust me, there's not very many positive comments in there. I've read through a few pages of them. So,
holy
crap. You want to be entertained, just give that a read through.
Facebook.com/Netflix.
Nope.
If you haven't liked them up yet.
Netflix fail.
Well, we'll see what happens on that in the future. I mean, this is still part of their diabolical plan to move completely from... the reason why they're called Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, Netflix immediately to me implies streaming.
Well, sure.
It doesn't say DVDs.
The amount of overhead they would shed from getting rid of physical media would be huge. So.
Yeah, and that's why they're going. I think they had like a 20-30 year plan or something. They had a plan. They're like the Cylons. They have a plan. They're going to get all the movie companies on board, and then they'll wipe out all
the. I think they lost one, though. I think they lost Sony or something, or for a while they lost Sony.
It was a deal with Starz. Sony had a deal with Starz, which had a deal with Netflix, and the Sony Starz deal had a problem, so they had to take it off Netflix. Mm. But Sony was like, yeah, we still want to get them up there through this Starz thing, but we first need to work this out. So
gotcha.
They basically kind of was like, it's really not that big of a deal, but we have to take them off for now. So, oh well.
Yeah.
In any case, moving on, this coming Friday, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 is released. It was directed by David Yates.
Yes.
And David Yates is going to do Stephen King's The Stand, or may do it.
Yeah, and just getting a chance to really quickly read through this article for the first time. For those of you not familiar with Stephen King's The Stand, it's In my opinion, one of his better novels. It's a pretty long one, and it's, in fact, it's been adapted into a miniseries on television. So I think it was a total of, like 14 or 16 hours worth.
It was really long.
Yeah, it's really long.
It was like a bunch of two-hour episodes, and I can't remember what they were.
Yeah, how long it was. There might have been 4 2-hour episodes, possibly.
1994, starring Gary Sinise.
Yeah. So, I guess they want to, Warner Brothers, or not Warner Brothers, am I reading this right? No, Warner Brothers still wants to turn this franchise into a three-film movie franchise. So I guess it could be done in three films, because, you know, the movies don't have to be 2 hours, they can be longer. Mm-hmm. But there's not a whole lot of action, so this is much more of a drama. So be interesting to see how well they do. The beginning of it would probably be pretty amazing, as far as the sort of onslaught of the virus and people escaping from, like, New York. One of my favorite written scenes in a book ever. People crawling through the Lincoln Tunnel. Mm-hmm. Over thousands of dead people.
Ah, and you know what? It's streaming.
Yeah.
Streaming on Netflix. So, if you want to check out the Gary Sinise version of The Stand, it's streaming, and it looks like it was 4 episodes, or at least... Yeah, it was 4 episodes.
4 2-hour episodes.
The Plague, The Dreams, The Betrayal, and The Stand.
Yeah.
Parts names. 90 minutes each.
Yeah. Highly recommend that you pick up the book if you can.
So, 6 hours.
Yeah.
Looks like...
So I guess that would work out, 3 2-hour movies.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and they can go, you know, if there was something that they couldn't do for TV, they would be able to do it on here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe expand on some things. Maybe it is something where they still did compress things for the television program, and they can expand on them in 3 to 2.5-hour movies, maybe. So
yeah.
He can get squeeze a little bit more time. The only thing is about drama, and if there's not much action, you know, keeping people in place, because a lot of dramas can't go too long, otherwise people get tired in their seats.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see. I guess it's one where, like, if I watch the first one, and the first one is rather... faithful to the novel, then I'll be all on for the two more parts of it. So mm-hmm. We'll see. Bring it on.
Speaking of action, one last thing I found also on Cinema Blend: Captain America wields his shield in a new fight scene clip. You know that scene in the trailer where it has the guys with the flamethrowers that kind of box him in?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is the scene that leads up to that.
Okay.
Through the scene, he's shield bashing people. You see him throwing it, how he utilizes it that way, and then ends with the flamethrower guys. So it's kind of like a test shot. Like,
right.
This is something that's part of the movie, but this is kind of an example of, see, this works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he can easily use his shield, it looks good, and here's what it would look like in the midst of the movie.
Right.
I really liked it, so I wanted to share that with people. It's on Cinema Blend. I'll have a link in the show notes.
Yeah, so far there hasn't been too much from this movie that's made me cringe or not.
No, there isn't the URL, so it'll be on the website.
Yay!
If it will give me the embed code. Anyways, I'll do that later. With that, been a crazy week, so we haven't checked on feedback. So, moving on in... to the past.
You're telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Oh, I gotta love it when you can't hear these clips, but that's okay.
Yep.
So going back to 1993 with the Sylvester Stallone, Sandra Bullock, Wesley Snipes action movie Demolition Man.
Yes.
63% fresh 60 audience.
Yeah, very interesting that it's got an almost exact same sort of split between the audience and the reviewers. Don't see that too often.
No, usually...
Especially for this kind of movie.
Yeah, either they strongly agree, so like you see 90-93s or something like
right.
that for those really, really good movies. But this is being...
it almost.
I don't know if it's. I would necessarily say mediocre.
No, the movie's not. I mean, this is the time. I mean, like, getting ahead of myself a little bit here, but like when this movie was made, this was sort of like the heyday. You're coming off of sort of the 80s action movie extravaganza with Arnold Schwarzenegger and, you know, Sylvester Stallone. I almost want to say that, like, the beginning 90s were sort of like the peak of that sort of thing, and as we kind of edged towards the, you know, 2000s, it sort of tapered off. So I think this is kind of like at a time when people were really into these sort of over-the-top action extravaganzas. They weren't expecting Shakespeare, you know, to come out of these movies. So it is what it is. It's definitely got the stink of Joel Silver all over it. Doesn't take long for there to be some sort of shot of his stars or something in some sort of, like, nakedness or, you know. That always cracks me up. But it's so funny because I've seen this movie a bunch of times, but I always sort of forget the details in between viewings. Like, I kind of know the premise all the time, and then it's sort of like, I'm like, what? I always forget the fact that he's there for a reason. Like, they wake him up to do a job. Like, I'm always expecting him just to escape just because he's evil. And, I always forget that somebody's actually kind of programmed him to escape. As part of his rehab.
Teddy bear.
A little bit, yeah. So, teddy bear. I don't know. It's an interesting joyride. It's kind of funny now to see a movie like this where people... I mean, and it's kind of woven into the humor of the film, the swearing. It's a little jarring now, I think, to see just, like, the blatant sort of... I mean, it's funny. It's done in a funny way, especially with the, you know, John Spartan, you're fine, one credit for the, you know, where it's always going off in the background, like, you hear that.
Yeah, it's one great thing about the continuity is, like, they know every single time somebody says this, we need this little sound to go off. And, I mean, they focus on it to kind of show it, and then it's pretty much one of those things that later on, as they're filming things, they don't worry about it. Right. Then later in editing, in the sound editing, they go back and say, okay, where's the swear? There's a swear word right here. Okay, I put the sound in the background here.
It was somebody's job to listen for every inadvertent swear words that came out of Wesley Snipes or Sylvester Stallone's mouth.
Although there were a couple times when they were more, like, open public place where there was a word that went out, but...
Right.
You know, there was none of those.
There's nothing there for it to go, Yeah, thank God we don't have those for real. The funny thing about this that I always laugh at is the timing. Like, I think the movie opens in 1996?
96,
yeah. And the movie came out in 1993, so it was saying, like, 3 years in the future that, like, Los Angeles was just going to be, like, this complete and utter war zone. And I'm trying to remember... from the early 90s, if there was there something going down in LA that made it seem like it was going to be...
I was also like 12, 13 years old, yeah, so...
I don't remember. I just graduated high school, so I don't remember anything over the top that was going down, but yeah,
it
I guess...
It was just like publicity about all these gang wars and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's
that
probably...
Like showing disasters. But this was also this one crazy... insane guy going all over the top.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that the entire place was going to go crazy, but this character, if he was in this world, he would have taken over this area of Los Angeles and have it hostages, which he... No, here's a question. Right at the beginning, this is what set it up. So Spartan goes in. He said he did a thermal scan. There was only 8 guys, so there was all clear. So he asked where the hostages were, and he wasn't told. There was an explosion, and blah, blah, blah. He says, there's bodies everywhere.
Right.
The question is, were they already dead?
Yeah, I think if they're not going to show up on a thermal scan, they were already dead. And I would hope...
Or were they shielded? Did he have them... It's like, yeah, they'll probably do a thermal scan. Let's hide them. So that they won't be detected.
Well, that's the one big plot hole that they sort of jump around, because you would think that if they were already dead, that I mean, maybe I'm taking it for granted, but I would have imagined that forensic science in 1996 would have been able to figure out that those people were already dead before the explosion.
But if they knew that they were already dead,
right?
Why did he get in trouble?
That's why I said it's sort of like a plot hole. It's sort of like not explained. Yeah,
exactly. So I think the implication was they were alive and shielded from thermal scans, so they just didn't come up on the thermal scan.
He didn't do a good enough job.
And then his job ended up blowing. So he should have found them, verified that they were already dead, then go after.
Because his sentence was for involuntary manslaughter, so, right. You know.
I would assume that they were already dead, because he's insane like that.
So, I was looking up a couple things here on IMDb, and the late 80s, sort of early 90s, was when all the movies that were sort of centered around South Central Los Angeles were kind of hitting. So you had a lot of movies about gang violence. So this was probably like them saying, well, if this goes to the extreme, where will Los Angeles end up? You know. And then the other thing they say is that there's the big one in 2010, the big earthquake of 2010, which supposedly wipes out most of the Los Angeles. In the movie they call it San Angeles, which is San Diego, San Bernardino, Los Angeles,
and Metroplex.
Yeah, like this humongous sort of, future city all merged into one. What they don't really do a good job, though, of is they talk about how, San Angeles, how that culture has been changed, like. But they don't really talk about whether or not that's pervasive of the rest of the United States, or it's like, you know, this little part of California, like some utopia, like somehow they've managed to rise from the ashes of, you know, the gang violence and stuff of the earthquake of 2010 and put themselves in such a spot. I would assume that most of the civilized parts of the United States have been this way, but they don't really ever talk about it. It's one of those things where it's like you're just kind of left to assume. But of course, you know, you've got, it's your classic sort of fish out of water story. I think this story has been told many, many times in different ways. What's the one that comes to mind? Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court, sort of.
Right.
You know, that sort of story. You've got the hero character or whatever that just doesn't really fit in with...
He's displaced because of time or space. Just the different things that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like the three seashells.
Right. Yeah. One of the big I always thought was funny was, like, okay, 1996 is like this gritty, harsh sort of like war zone. But they have this, like, ultra-fancy technology to just freeze people solid. It's like, again, you're supposed to sort of... It's like, we have this one part of technology that's super awesome and we can use to freeze you into a future that will have the rest of the technology caught up to this. It just seems sort of weird that they...
It could be just more of the focus on technology, you know?
Yeah.
They just decide to focus on, okay... Cryostasis is a great way of, you know, putting people in jail. We put them in stasis, just maintain those. You know how easy that would be? You would need less people there. You wouldn't have to hire. They would take up such less space because they're not actually, you know, because they're not moving around. They're just frozen solid there, and, you know, it would be cheaper that way.
Oh, we got...
And with our overcrowded prisons, and this might be one great way for people to not commit crimes, a deterrent, because do you really want to be an ice cube for 70 years?
And when they get out, they can knit you a nice sweater.
Exactly.
Yes. So, the other funny thing about this movie is the whole sort of, you know, there's always been movie tie-ins with franchises, outside of movies, the Yum Brands, which is Taco Bell, KFC, Pizza Hut, they've always sort of jumped onto certain movies. Mm-hmm. I remember they had a huge thing with the Star Wars prequels when they came out.
Did they have, like, glasses or something like that?
They had toys. I think they had everything.
Well, I remember at least as I was growing up, we had these actual glasses
mm-hmm.
that I think we got at Pizza Hut or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like Star Wars inspired.
Yeah. So, what makes me wonder about this is the concept in the movie of like the one surviving franchise restaurant. Like every restaurant is Taco Bell now. Taco Bell, at some point between, you know, 2006 and 2032, there was this franchise war, which they make it sound like there was just some bloody battle between all mm-hmm. of the businesses, and Taco Bell emerged as like the number one or only surviving franchise.
Those chihuahuas can be vicious.
Yeah, yeah. I just wonder if that was sort of written into the script already, like if that was part of the story, and then they decided to go, well, why don't we see if we can get some sponsor? Who's going to be the restaurant? Like, do we have to make up a restaurant, or can we?
Who can give us money?
Right. Who can give us money? Like, if that was just
let's finance the movie by saying, "Hey, your restaurant."
And it just makes me think, like,
of the future.
If that was, if this movie was written now in 2011, who do you think it would be? Taco Bell again, or do you think somebody else would have?
See, even back then, I don't think Taco Bell would have gotten done it. I think that's just completely inconceivable.
Mm-hmm.
Although, well, here's the problem, is because there's a lot of intermingling between different
right.
companies. Like, you see the Taco Bell Pizza Huts. You see the KFC Long John Silvers.
Right.
You know, you see those combination restaurants. So you could say, like, if Taco Bell went out, you wouldn't have just Taco Bell. You would have Taco Bell, you would have Pizza Hut.
Right.
You know, so you'd still have a variety. Although, I would have to say, I think McDonald's would win out.
Yeah, I get, well, and that, you know, that kind of, I think, let's see, we saw McDonald's in The Fifth Element.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Two golden menus.
The interesting thing is, though, like, I think Taco Bell was in it, A, because they paid them a lot of money to be in it.
Yeah.
But Taco Bell was sort of on its comeback in the early 90s.
Probably getting that, wasn't that when the Chihuahua, Yo Quiero Taco Bell.
Probably between 92 and sometime around there that was, but yeah, Taco Bell was sort of on the top. I remember seeing Taco Bells when I was really young, but there was only like one or two of them, and then it seemed like in the 90s, like, Taco Bells just exploded. They were like the Starbucks of the early 90s. They were just a Taco Bell everywhere. So I think they were just sort of like the franchise of the time that was growing and had the money to throw at a movie to say, hey, we're going to be in this movie. I'm just wondering, like, today, there's there really a franchise in the United States that would really sort of take that spot? I can't think of, like, some...
like an up-and-coming or something.
Like, it might be, like, I would say, I mean, even...
Right now, McDonald's is kind of doing a semi-rebranding, where they're trying to get away from the Ronald McDonald and go towards more of a coffee shop atmosphere. Because if you've been in a McDonald's lately, there's this complete redesign. It's not like the happy-go-lucky kiddie place.
Right.
It's a lot more... it really looks a lot more like a coffee shop. It's becoming McCafe. In fact, they should make just flat-out coffee shops called McCafe as kind of like a spin-off brand.
Right.
You know, and, you know, you can get it at a McDonald's or you can get it at a McCafe
directly,
cafe.
Directly compete with Starbucks?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So they're flat-out doing that. And I think they're indirectly doing that by trying to get to the current, you know, Starbucks atmosphere.
Right.
In their regular McDonald's stores.
I was just going through the list of, like, restaurants I could think of in my head that I've sort of been, like, the new sort of hip thing going down, like, Five Guys and, unfortunately, Chick-fil-A. And I'm like,
God chicken.
They just don't sort of fit. Although,
the problem with Chick-fil-A is that would mean there would be no restaurants open on Sundays.
Right.
They would just be...
You're on your own.
You're on your own on Sundays. Maybe the grocery stores and everything would probably still be open, but the restaurants, you would not be able to go out to a restaurant.
Right.
So, yeah, sorry, Chick-fil-A.
They had some highfalutin cuisine at that Taco Bell, though.
Honestly, I don't know what people's thing with Chick-fil-A is, because I really think they're bad food anyways.
Yeah, it's not very good. Not worth getting your panties in a wad over, really.
Oh, my God. Anyways.
It's you know, other little interesting bit of trivia. I hate to be talking about Taco Bell so long. The fact that, like, okay, overseas when they released this movie, Taco Bells weren't really known, so they had to sort of change the whole Taco Bell thing. So they changed it to Pizza Hut.
Which, as I said, right. is a related brand.
Right, it's owned by the same company, so that makes sense. But mm. I just find it kind of interesting that Pizza Hut is much more well-known out of...
You know, I would honestly think Pizza Hut would have been the brand that won out, not Taco Bell. Taco Bell. And it would make more sense. I don't know about you, but Pizza Hut, mm-hmm. you know, I can think of other things besides, you know, I could see that as more of a broad right. restaurant. Or even a nice restaurant. Like, they went to... when they went to the head guy's Cocteau.
Mm-hmm.
Cocteau invited him over to the thing, and it was a nice dinner, right?
Right.
Well, Pizza Hut, I could see as a place that could have nice... Like a nice Italian dinner. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be like an Olive Garden. Right. I could see something like that. The name is just too... fun? I don't know if that's...
Right. It's, yeah, Hut, Pizza Hut. It's mm-hmm. kind of... It's sort of a lowbrow name.
It's a lowbrow name, so you expect, you know, the fun.
Right.
You know, it's the thing where you've got the that coffee table,
not the
Pac-Man.
Not that Taco Bell is, like, upscale in any sense of the word, but it's just not as lowbrow as
Pizza
Hut. It's like, if it was Taco Shack, it would have been like a...
Yeah.
Would have been a toss-up between the two.
But in any case.
Yeah, so getting back to the actual movie, Wesley Snipes... What'd you think?
I love Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
I really do. When he's given a badass part.
Right.
And this is also shown in Blade.
Right.
Is when he's... If he's given a badass part, he's badass.
Right.
And I don't know. It's he fit this part so well that I can't see anybody else... in this part.
The weird thing about his character, though, for me, is when I see him in this role, I can't help but think of Dennis Rodman. And I don't know...
It's the hair.
But I don't know if that was, like, on purpose. Like, was that... Like, it seemed like almost like they were trying to make him...
Wasn't Dennis Rodman big in that time?
Yeah, see, I'm such not a sports person that I'm looking up right now.
So am I.
He was on the Pistons in 1990-91 and the San Antonio Spurs in 93-94. So it seems like he was an up-and-comer. He didn't play with...
hit the Bulls the in Bulls. 1995.
Yeah. Which is sort of when his name kind of exploded all over.
Cause, was it when he was at the Bulls? Or
well, as far as in my universe.
You know. Oh, yeah.
You know, he might have been huge back in with the Spurs or... with the Pistons, but I think he got his bad, sort of like bad boy reputation before that. So
okay.
It just seems like it's such an archetype sort of character.
Or could it be the other way around, where this movie came out and Dennis Rodman was like,
yeah
that's awesome.
I want to meet him. Could be, maybe. I don't know. I don't know my history there, but
I can totally see that.
Immediately when I see this, that's who I think of.
This is what happens if you don't keep Dennis Rodman on a leash. Although, didn't he get married in a dress?
Oh, yes. Yes, he did.
Something like that.
He did.
He is crazy.
That's yeah, just a little say. Bit. But yeah, he was a very entertaining performance in this. I think he was sort of the perfect foil for Mr. Stallone. Like, because like, the whole thing about this is like Stallone's character is, you know... is sort of crazy too, but crazy in a different way. Like, you know, Simon Phoenix is crazy in a maniacal way. Like, he just does whatever, doesn't care, has no conscience dictating his actions. And it seems like Sylvester does the sort of same thing, but he always is sort of reeled back by right and wrong. Like, won't overtly do something that's wrong, you know, under his knowledge. So, I just always thought that was interesting. Rambo the Destroyer.
Yeah. So in addition to switching Taco Bells to Pizza Hut, by the way, there was a couple of goofs on getting that changed. In Kuwait, the Arabic title of the movie in the cinemas was Rambo the Destroyer, the idea being that the Rambo movies were very popular, so associating Sylvester Stallone to Rambo in the title would perhaps sell more tickets. The only thing is that trivia doesn't tell if that actually worked or not.
Yeah, I would have more thought of it as a sequel to Conan the Destroyer. Like, here's Arnold Schwarzenegger's version, here's Sylvester Stallone's version.
I almost think it would be a parody, almost.
Yeah, that would have been pretty funny.
Be like, what would happen if Rambo was back in the Conan days? And
yeah.
What if it wasn't Conan, it was Rambo back in the day? So, anyways. With that, I think it's time to find out what we've learned.
Yes.
Learned a couple things. Don't trust the thermal scans.
No.
All restaurants in the future will be Taco Bells.
Ugh.
Be prepared for the three seashells. And it takes a maniac to catch a maniac.
Yep.
And that is what we've learned from Demolition Man. All I've got to say is this is a classic action movie. Some might say it's a bad movie. Some. They may be right, but I can't help myself but like it.
Only 40%, according to Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, it's sort of like I said, it's when action movies, I think, were just at their peak or just cresting their peak on their way sort of out of favor. Because it doesn't seem like action movies really get the same sort of popularity that they did from the late 80s and early 90s. And again, this seemed to be one of, in my opinion, Joel Silver was still producing entertaining films back then. So, if you're down for a classic sort of early 90s action film, this is definitely one that should be in your collection.
Mm-hmm. And if Steve has something to say, I'll probably put it in here.
Hey, y'all, it's Steve again. Alright, here's what I have to say about Demolition Man. I can totally remember when I first saw this movie, and I remember that for some crazy reason, I just thought Wesley Snipes was a major badass. That, it was kind of a really weird idea to think about the cryogenic freezing of prisoners and all that kind of stuff, and then him coming back, and just his character was, kind of undefeatable. Unfortunately, today, he kind of just looks like a cartoon character and just kind of was annoying. But still, had badass tendencies and all that kind of stuff. But the person that I thought was really actually kind of a badass in this movie wound up being Sandra Bullock. Because, I'm a big, huge fan of the kick-ass girls and all that kind of stuff. So while Huxley kind of had no idea really how to use the skills and training she had, it's really cool to see her evolve from being kind of this person with power who had no idea what she was doing with it and then evolved into someone who knew how to use it. So I really thought that that was really cool and probably the biggest thing I enjoyed from the movie. I definitely don't think that, I don't know that Lori Petty, from looking at the trivia, I don't know that Lori Petty would have really fit with this role, because she would have been kind of badassy from the beginning. But, hey, whatever. I think they made the right choice with going with Sandra Bullock. Fortunately, I don't think I've ever figured out the whole three shells process, and I really don't want to. So I'm just going to skip on over that, but I know that it's always a funny little theme from this movie, and I'm sure you guys had some fun talking about that. But overall, I think it's definitely a good romp in the genre of movies, from like the 80s and 90s, those action flicks, kind of like The Running Man, Total Recall, Judge Dredd, things of that nature. And I definitely think it's something people should check out. So take your time, check out Stallone, Bullock, and Snipes in this movie, and I think you'll enjoy it.
All right. Let's go into the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
So right now, we went to see Larry Crown in the intermediate time between Transformers and Harry Potter. This was the one that I thought looked kind of interesting, at least. Larry Crown, directed by Tom Hanks. Starring Tom Hanks. Written by Tom Hanks. Oh, I already went into the trivia. Starring Julia Roberts and a couple other people who I can't pronounce their names except for Sarah Mahoney, which I can pronounce the names, but Gugu Mbatha-Raw?
Guju?
I don't know. I liked her.
Oh yeah, I mean,
she was really good. I can't say her name, but I liked her. Just kind of like I can't say. Maybe I can. Maybe I can. Can I do it? Can I? George Takei. I did it.
Yes, George Takei, like toupee.
Or that's how as in gay. That.
Yeah.
But yeah. So. Basically, guy. He's been work. He was in the Navy. He got out of the Navy. Had never gone to college. Started working at UMart.
Yeah.
Worked there for a really long time. Was a really great employee. Got to basically as far as he could go without a degree. And stayed there for a really long time. And UMart said, you know what? We think we're holding you back. Because we can't advance you further. And you know, UMart here wants to make sure that people move further in the company.
Yeah.
And because you cannot, because the lack of the college education,
what'd they say?
We are going to let you go.
Our journey has ended.
Our journey has ended.
Yes. Corporate bullshit. That's what it is. I'm sort of wondering where this sort of came out of as far as like Tom Hanks. So like I said, this was actually co-written with Tom Hanks and Nia Vardalos.
Something like that.
I just kind of wonder where this sort of spark came from. If it's sort of like an economy thing driven by that, or if this sort of hit somewhere or someone that Mr. Hanks knows. Just seems sort of out of left field for him, kind of. On one hand, I'm happy to see Mr. Hanks doing more like of a comedic role.
Mm-hmm. He hasn't done one of those in a while, has he?
Yeah, he, you know, he got his start in comedy and
I mean like Big and,
well, I'm going back to like Bosom Buddies in the,
oh yeah,
in the 70s, you know. So yeah, when he started doing, you know, more and more dramatic roles, it was really cool to kind of see him stretch his wings and do things that were out of his comfort zone and be really good at them. But it's nice to just sort of see him come back to you know, where he started from. Although I wouldn't really, you know, say this is not like a slapstick comedy by any stretch of the imagination. This is more, I guess you would fall into the romantic comedy, rom-com sort of.
Right. I mean, the only real comedy that he's done recently was, well, Pixar films.
Yeah.
It was Toy Story. He was in Cars doing the Woody Carr voice during the credits, but you know, so, but everything else has been pretty serious.
What was the movie he did where he was stranded in the airport?
I saw that one just a second here.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about, though. The Terminal.
Yes.
Where
he played the foreigner and he was denied entry into the United States and he couldn't fly back and
he couldn't fly back because there was no country to go to.
Yeah, he just, you know, lived in the airport for a while. That was a good film. So
Road to Perdition, which some people have weird mixed feelings about, which I think is an amazing movie.
Adaptation of a graphic novel.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
I had it somewhere around here. I was going to watch it the other day after I had it mentioned. But anyways.
Yeah, Mr. Hanks was funny. It was good to see him in that. But I have to say, my favorite person in this whole movie has to be Mr. Takei. He just cracked me up.
You know, he didn't crack me up. I was like, oh, this the scene in here again. Mm-hmm. But it was also... Let's talk about this movie for a second and my reactions to comedies.
Oh, yes.
Specifically...
Oh, the embarrassing,
embarrassing moments. The first half of this movie had a lot of those.
Yes.
And every time he was in Mr. Takei's class... I'm not going to try to pronounce his character's name. Mr. Takei's class... He was so... stupid.
Yeah.
His phone went off and he pulled it out to check it in the middle of class.
Right.
You do not do that. And it was one thing that just really bugged me. It's as bad, if not worse, than doing it in a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one place where your cell phone is dark in your pocket. If it buzzes, that just lets you know that when you get out of class, you need to check your phone.
Right.
When you get out of class.
Yeah, don't do it in class.
Otherwise, in your pocket.
Right.
You know, and it was those scenes where I'm like, oh no!
Right.
And then each single time.
You're cringing in your seat.
I have this thing where, no, you cannot take my cell phone away from me.
Right.
And I'm going to make sure you have no reason to take it away from
me.
Right. So, my cell phone is dark and in my pocket and not coming out. So, that was one thing that bugged me, and probably me not necessarily appreciating his role as much as you should, because he's an amazing actor.
Sort of segueing from that, though, what did you think, if you managed to be able to uncover your eyes long enough to see it, what did you think of their whole use of the whole text message bubble?
I thought that was great.
Did you see that? It was a great,
instead of showing the phone,
right.
It just says, this is what they're seeing.
It was like the pop-up video in the movie, like, you see the little bubble pop up, and you see their text message come up, which is sort of...
And you see that little, like, icon. It was almost like a chat window, right. Almost. And it was different colors for different people, and so I thought that was a great convention.
Yeah, in this texting world, it's sort of... I don't think it's shocked anybody to see that. Like, it was just sort of like, okay, I know immediately what's going on.
I mean, he's looking at his phone, and this is what he's seeing. And I think it is a lot better that instead of seeing it on the phone,
right,
just seeing him look at it,
mm-hmm.
and then seeing the pop-up to say, this is what he's seeing. So I thought that was a great convention.
It's a much more elegant way to handle it than...
Yeah. And back to the embarrassing moments thing for a minute. The embarrassing moments really only lasted for like a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't really... Each of the embarrassing moments were, it was there and then went away. You know, so I was like, oh no, I can't believe... Okay, it's done.
Didn't drag on.
So don't think that I didn't see half this movie.
I know.
I saw most of it. It was just these like little bits and pieces that I was like, oh no. I think mainly when those cell phone scenes.
I'm just so amused by it. I can't help it. You know, in my mind, you're cringing in fetal position in the chair. You know.
Yeah. Like, well, I think the cell phone thing was more of I was cringing of. No way, you're not... No, don't pull the phone out of your pocket! It wasn't necessarily... In those scenes, were not necessarily embarrassing moments, but more of, I can't believe you're that stupid.
Yeah, the only thing that really sort of I thought was weird about the whole cell phone thing was... Because the movie seemed like it was making sort of like a commentary on the whole, like... You know, people are much more involved in, like, their cell phones than real life, and, like, it... overrules and overrides everything else. Like, your phone rings, I have to answer. There's no way I can't. Somebody's trying to get a hold of me, I have to pick this phone up and talk. Like, and I thought it was very much sort of like a commentary on that. What I thought interesting was the fact that George Takei's character was much more the phone Nazi, as far as, give me your phone, you can't use your phone in my class. You know, it's going to sit up here until you're ready.
You know, that to me, that felt like an actual teacher.
Right.
You know, a good teacher would do that.
I'm just surprised that it wasn't the Julia Roberts character that was, like, when the guy picked up the phone, it's like, oh, I have to take this. That she wasn't, like, the type of person that would just walk up to him and just be like...
Here's the thing is how I feel about Julia Roberts' character as a teacher is she doesn't care.
Oh, she's
the only reason why she's doing this is because she needs to work on her master's or something like
right.
that. It wasn't quite clear. But she really didn't care.
Right.
And... Which is really funny, considering at the first things that she says in her class is... care. She writes it on the board.
Right.
And I'm going
to... Turn your cell phone off, Jeff.
There are 2 hours of your life you will never... My brother, and this is I'm sure this is a comment on this movie, says, that's 2 hours of your life that you're never going to get back. So, I'm going to check to verify. Yep, that's exactly what he commented on. I disagree with him.
Yeah.
I actually thoroughly enjoyed this movie. Am I going to see it again? Maybe not.
No.
But, I mean, I think this is well worth a rental. I think it's very very much a date movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's a good movie. But that's just generally speaking. We haven't gotten to that part yet.
Yeah. Another thing that was blowing my mind in this movie, I didn't understand the whole scooter gang thing. But I actually do know somebody. Now, they don't call it a gang. Somebody here in Austin, actually. His name is Wade. that drives around with a bunch of other people on scooters. Like, they go on drives and stuff. And I just thought it was so funny that that was actually...
I don't think they really... I mean, I think when it came to calling it a scooter gang, it was just supposed to be, you know, a funny ha.
Well, there was the whole snapping finger scene from West Side Story, like, you know, we're gonna do this, and I was like, really? If they start singing, I'm walking out of this.
Like, no, I was. It looked like, okay, there's some sort of initiation going on. I thought the reference and everything being like, yeah, this is a gang.
Mm-hmm.
But then the people in the gang were a whole bunch of different types of people. It wasn't like a gang.
No.
There was, and they were causing trouble.
And they always seemed to get supportive comments from the bikers in the movie whenever they rode past like a bunch of bikers.
They were like, "All right, you guys are awesome."
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
I just thought it was so weird that they he took them to the yard sale,
mm-hmm.
and then they just took over his house.
No.
Cut his hair and flung Schwade.
I'm going to sort of jump ahead here only because this is going to be part of my recommendation, but I can only really talk about it a lot here. There was a point in this movie, like you were saying, you had a really hard time with the beginning of this movie because of all of the embarrassing moments and all that. You had a hard time. And then once it got kind of through that, you were okay and you really enjoyed it.
And I think the moment that you're about to talk about was actually
the turning point.
That was the split.
That was the turning point. Mm-hmm. See, I had the opposite reaction. And the only reason I had that opposite reaction was I really had a hard time having sympathy for Julia Roberts' character. I totally identified with Tom Hanks. I was totally cool with his motivations and why he was doing the things he was doing. He was sort of, again, a fish out of water,
right.
Starting over, being thrust into sort of like, hey, we don't want you anymore, and you need to learn in order for you to become useful. But I loved his tenacity and how he just sort of rolled with the punches, and he, you know, tackled everything that sort of got thrown at him. I got this feeling that, like, at one point he had, like, this, in his mind, the ideal life. And that slowly sort of got torn away from him. Like, we know he's divorced, but we don't know anything about his divorce.
Mm-hmm.
They hint at that he had children, but you don't really hear much about them. He's living alone. When he loses his job, he obviously becomes sort of in trouble financially, making house payments and whatnot. I guess why I have a hard time with the Julia Roberts character is sort of like what they're trying to make out with her is that she's married in the movie, and her husband is a writer, and they sort of show like, okay, she has this job that's sort of emotionally draining on her, and she just really doesn't care anymore, and she comes home every day, and her husband, who's a quote unquote writer, which it looks like he wrote a book or something because she had a bunch of them stacked up.
She listed off a whole bunch of accomplishments that he had, that he was this professor, and then he went to a writer, he published several books, and then he became a new media and went from writer to blogger, and now he's just a guy who stays at home looking at porn.
Looking at porn and making comments on blogs. You know, he talks about posts that I made
4 posts today.
Yeah, she's like, those aren't posts, those are comments. I understand that, yes, it would be very frustrating to walk into that every day. But I had a hard time sympathizing with her, only because to me it just... You don't get to see a lot of her sort of, like, struggling to make anything better. It just seems like she gave up. Like, I am done with this relationship. And then when they kiss, when Tom Hanks... Oh, spoiler alert. When they kiss in the movie...
Wait a minute, didn't they actually...
They have it in the trailer. It's in the trailer.
That's not a spoiler.
But whatever. Maybe I haven't seen the trailer. When the kiss happens, she's all about getting him in the room. Like, why don't you come inside? Like, now technically she had just gotten in a fight with her husband.
And she was drunk.
I'll give her that she was drunk. But it was pretty much like, I don't care, come inside and we're going to have... And then she said, this happened before with the parking attendant. So she's cheated on her husband before with a parking attendant, and that's where I lost my sympathy for her. It's like, alright, I can see you're drunk and in the moment you met this guy who's really awesome and it's sort of tempting, and but he sort of put up the wall and said, whoa,
he's like,
slow down,
one,
crazy,
you're drunk,
yes, you know.
Two, you told me about the parking attendant,
right? You know, so when the parking
Three,
attendant
you're
came,
my teacher.
I lost all the sort of sympathy for her, and I think that really made it hard for me to sort of get back into the idea of them, like, being happy for her that she got together with him. Like, it was kind of like, I didn't see her doing anything to help her current situation. Where, like, Tom Hanks, he was, like, the positive, I'm going to go back to school and I'm going to do this and I have to go get a job as a cook and, you know, work my way through school. And it just seemed like, you know, I had a hard time with her character. Maybe I'm being too harsh. I don't know. But once the kiss happened, it was I had the exact same reaction, or opposite reaction, as you. Like, I kind of lost it. I literally wrote down on my notes, as I'm watching the movie, they lost me at the kiss. They have lost me at this point. I am not sympathetic to her anymore.
Well, look at it this a slightly different way. That first half of the movie...
Mm-hmm.
Which, don't get me wrong, I'm okay with the first half. Right. The first half is just perfectly fine. It's just I hid my eyes too frequently. That's all. I felt like that was a journey of Larry's. Right. About his journey of, here's the situation, here's the problem, and how he defeats that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And in some sense, it's about him giving up a little bit.
Right.
But still trying to do some things like, I give up, but... if I give up, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And how he goes into it. So he's like, okay, I give up. I understand the situation. I'm going to go back to college. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a few classes based off of these recommendations. There's a few people here who are kind of nice. I can get a temporary, a part-time job. I've also realized I can't afford this house. Right. I need something that's not going to cost me $80 every time to fill up the tank. That's kind of, and that's where he goes with the scooter.
Right.
So he keeps that car as kind of like his go-getter, etc. But you know, keeps the scooter for getting around town. He then gives up the house.
Right.
Which, to me, this was. The point where he gave up the house,
right,
was a very touching moment for me, because I cannot see anybody giving up their house. Right. I work in mortgage servicing right now. I'll flat out admit that. One thing, he can't do that. Okay, and don't get me wrong. He could eventually get to that, but he needed to put it up for a short sale, and then he would do the deed in lieu of foreclosure. Sure, right. We can do that.
Right.
But, you know, so there is, but there's a process. He can't just put everything together,
right,
hand it over to the bank, and then walk away. He can't do that.
I think
so. That was a little, that took, because I'm in mortgage servicing,
right,
that took me out of the situation a little bit.
Right.
But I understood the implications, and they made it in an easy way for people to understand, yeah, you're going to get to a point where you can't afford your home. And
I think
this
also,
you just need to understand your situation and know it's time to move on.
I think it was almost sort of symbolic, though. I think that's why they have that in there. A, it's very relevant to time period right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was sort of a symbolic thing on his character's part, because he purposely, when they had his divorce with his wife, he went out and took out a loan to pay off his wife's half of the house, so that he could keep that house.
Right.
And I wonder if that's sort of a symbolic thing of them saying he's letting go of his ties to his wife and his previous life.
Again, to move on.
Right. I'm cutting the cord here and moving out of this place that was sort of like I sort of wallowed in. I had the sheen of everything's great and happy, and I go to my job and I pick up trash on my way through the parking lot and yay.
And it looked like you thoroughly liked the job. And
right.
There's a lot of people who work at a simple, you know, Target, Shopko, Walmart type place, and really enjoy working there. And I can really see that happening. And then when you lose it, when that's what you've been doing for however long, and that you're in that routine and it's a solid thing, you understand it, you know, you like the people you work with.
Right.
And then losing that.
Right. I very much identified with Tom Hanks' character in this. I got him, and I really liked his character. I wanted to see him succeed, and I wanted to see him, you know, it was really cool to watch him sort of like be, you know, he understood all the crazy economic stuff that Takei's character was, you know, making them learn.
Right.
And it sort of gave you hope that, hey, this guy has potential, even though, you know, he's an older guy having to go to college for the first time, that he's going to be okay. They didn't focus so much on the fact that, you know, he got his job back or whatever. They just sort of, it was like the journey to sort of like self-discovery, like rediscovering yourself, cutting off all the old ties that were maybe of holding you down, your job that you did every day for 14 or 15 years, or your relationship that was holding you down. You know, you got into something that you probably shouldn't have gotten into, and they were both sort of cutting those ties, and then finding each other, and then they don't even really, it's sort of, I kind of, if I liked anything about it, I liked the fact that the whole movie was about that journey to the two of them getting together, but it wasn't the typical sort of like, oh my God, we're going to watch them get married now.
Right. Thing. It was, it sort was of more just of,
ended.
It know. Was the matchmaking part.
Yeah.
So it was them getting to be like, start going out.
Right.
And you could possibly see in the future, maybe everything's working out great. They're going, they end up getting married in the future. But it's that start because and solidifying it. I mean, the one big problem with it was that they were student teacher. Mm-hmm. It's not really kosher for teachers to be dating their students, no matter what the age. So, it that being appropriate. Now, one of the things that I liked about the Julia Roberts part was she was going through a similar journey.
Right.
It was just a completely different situation. She wasn't losing her house. She wasn't losing her job or anything. She was at a job she just didn't care for. She was with a man that she no longer really loved and was somewhat cheating on her in some sense.
Yeah, and she was sort of on the precipice of sort of falling into an abyss because they kind of hinted at her drinking a lot.
Right.
You know, didn't really go into it, and he, her husband made a statement like, oh, why don't you go get some more booze, or you're boozing it up, or, you know, so there, she was sort of on that edge of sort of falling into that, a dark place.
Like, her life was going down in one way, his life was going down in a different way.
Right.
And it was about that meeting, and how them meeting together, and having that, even just having that kiss, how he influences her to take action. To finally get into a place that's more suitable for herself and maybe find someone new.
Right.
So I really did enjoy that journey as well. So, yeah. I think we are fetty. Oh, let's talk about Talia.
Okay.
Just for a brief minute here. She's the one who introduced Tom Hanks to his motor scooter gang. And then there was the relationship of what... Now, did you feel like she was actually flirting
with Larry Crumb? She was flirting with him a little bit. And I think a lot of people get confused by her character. Mm-hmm. And I think that's intentional because she's there to sort of confuse Julia Roberts. Julia Roberts sees her and is like, oh, I see why...
You're going for the young,
right. He's going back
girl.
To school and, you know, he's... I think she... that Talia was more his muse, like that it's okay, she's the one that's pushing him out of his comfort level, like we're gonna get you out of the polo shirts and we're gonna get you to cut your hair that you've had the same hairstyle for 20 years. And so she was like the catalyst of, and of course there might have been some sort of attraction there with him that made him go, oh, okay, we'll do that. And she's like, oh, you'll look much better if you do this. And you know,
he'd be like, ooh, this cute little girl.
Right, she's doting
is
over
doing
me.
Something.
Right.
And he was probably like, you know, especially when he found out she has a boyfriend.
Right.
He was like all, you know, she's just a good friend. She's helping me out here.
Exactly.
And then the jealous boyfriend.
Yes. Yes, I love those scenes. The scenes with the boyfriend and him were kind of funny.
And the tramp stamp that says soy sauce.
Yes.
Anyways.
Yes. Should have been one of our What Have We Learned.
That should have been. Now that I've said it. Speaking of which, what we've learned from this, a college education will help you not only get a better job, but keep your current one.
Mm-hmm.
Getting kicked in the butt hurts no matter the language. Tai Chi cures diabetes. Adina Lu never goes that fast. Sorry. That's my little thing. Tucking in your polo shirt makes you look like a cop. I tuck in my polo shirt anyways. There are only two things you can't do in college. Smoke in the building and use your phone in my class. And that is what we've learned from Larry Crown. First half of the movie was hard for me to get through. Second half, well made up for it for me. It was a wonderful date movie. Just overall, I thought the movie was great. It was just not an embarrassing moment sort of guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm torn. I want to like this movie more than I did. And like I said, I was on track for really enjoying this film up until the infamous kiss happened. The movie's cute. I can see, you know, it would be a good date movie. Couples would probably enjoy going on that movie. It just, with the whole kiss thing and my emotional reaction to that, it felt a little schizo, sort of, at times. Because I went from, oh, I really like this movie, it's kind of cute, to, oh, I really don't like her character. I did this whole sort of jump that sort of took me out of it. So, but that's just me, you know. I don't know if Steve's going to have that kind of reaction. It'll be interesting to see what he has to say about it.
Steven, what did you think?
All right, here's Steve with my thoughts about Larry Crown. Now you all got kind of see what I deal with on a daily basis at my job. Just kidding. But truth be told, I do work at a community college. And so, seeing some of the students and their reactions to teachers and the things that they deal with in the classroom. And even the funnier thing is my boss is actually the Dean of Student Services. So, I'm an assistant dean. So I thought that was quite hilarious. Because I could totally see him in that role in this movie. But overall, when it comes to this movie, it really didn't do a whole lot for me. I felt a little bit like the Tom Hanks' character was like Forrest Gump going to college. And it really didn't, I didn't really get enamored to him other than the fact that he lost his job and needed to go back to school. And he was an adult that actually took the time to do that. I think what I've found from working in the college environment is that people who come back because they need to or want to really have a drive, and he clearly had that. You did see the interesting stuff about him being in classrooms with younger people and all that. So it is kind of a slice of life, to believe it or not. But I still like the students around him better, because they were totally the characters. You could pick each of those people out of a class of students or a group of students, and I thought that was kind of fun. I thought the person that actually made this movie was Pam Grier initially, but then when George Takei showed up, I just thought he was the prototypical, economics teacher and a really boring subject. Sorry, economics people, but for me, boring subject. Who thinks that he's funny. And I think the best line in that whole movie was when he was just like, and it was, the book was written by me kind of stuff. And that is such a prototypical college professor thing to say. So overall, my recommendation is kind of mediocre on this movie. But I enjoyed it because of the subject matter and because it's something that's kind of close to me. But at the same time, I don't know that everybody would. So keep that in mind, and that's my review.
Great! Moving on into the future.
Hi, welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
And in the future, we are looking at the girl with the dragon tattoo. Yes, I said the future. Mm. I'm not talking about that Swedish one that they made a few years ago.
From that book that was written
by someone who lives in Sweden. That's why they made it in Sweden. And this movie is made in Sweden. It's the one directed by David Fincher, the infamous director David of Fincher. Facebook. Of The Social Network, excuse me.
Seven.
Close enough. Starring Daniel Craig, Rooney Mara, and Stellan Skarsgård. Remake of the Swedish film based on the novel. So the talking point is, remake of a Swedish film. Again.
Yes. So is it talking about Let Me In or Let the Right One In? Well, I always forget now which one is the Swedish one and which one is the American.
Let the Right One In is Swedish. Okay. Let Me In is the American.
Okay.
This one, however, I don't think is going to be necessarily a shot for shot. I think this is an original. They're just doing it again with the more English cast and director.
I've heard good things about the novel that it's based on. It's a series of novels, actually.
I've heard it's the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nets, and The Girl Who Played with Fire.
Yeah, I think that it was. Sounds familiar. So it's a series of novels. That I've heard good things about the original Swedish movie
on the Twit Network for a while. They were raving about it. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It's on Audible. Blah blah blah. Yeah. You know, while they were doing the ads, and they were like, "Such a great book."
Yeah. So I'm again before I saw. Let Me In. I did see Let the Right One In, and I honestly preferred the Swedish version to the American one. I'd be interested to see how I feel about this one. The thing that the American one's got going for it is David Fincher.
Daniel Craig,
yes.
Yeah, I love Daniel Craig.
But I read an interview with Mr. Fincher when he was talking about what he really was going for when he made this movie. Is he feels that there are not enough films made for adults. Like, he remembers watching The Godfather for the first time, and that was such a powerful film. And yes, it was violent, but it was just a very powerful movie. And he doesn't feel that those sort of movies are being made anymore in America.
Trying to appeal to a wider audience, not just the adults.
He's making this movie to be an R-rated adult film about adult subjects. And no, I'm not saying adult as in porn adult. Just very powerful, So that, when I read that article, that sort of put a little bit more spark of hope in seeing this American version, you know, because I do enjoy David Fincher's work.
And I don't know the difference. I don't remember who did Let the Right One In or versus the Let Me In. But I think this is more of... David Fincher is taking this book and he's making the movie of the book.
Right.
The point is to take the actual book.
Mm-hmm.
The book isn't necessarily meant for people who are in their teens. Obviously not meant for the people who are less than their teens, but... it is supposed to be for mature audiences only.
Right.
And something with the high... I don't know if higher concepts would actually be the right word. But, you know, it's just that... It gets a better... That more adult feeling. That R rating. And R ratings are not bad. Like, earlier in the year, when they were like, The King's Speech, it was going to win the Oscar, and they were going to put it out as a PG-13 movie, and we're cutting out, you know, the swear words, which caused it to go an R, and it's like, no, this movie is an R-rated movie. R rating is not bad.
Right.
It just means that this movie... I mean, even some R-rated movies, kids in their teens, PG-13 people, could still... watch. It's just that it has the language in there. In the case of The King's Speech, I think that was the only thing that really caused it to go R.
Well, and
I don't think it's like that.
The thing that I think there's sort of like a stigma now about R-rated films, that when you have an R-rated film, that it could be the best thing ever made, but you're automatically limiting your audience, like who's going to come to the theater to see this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So their payback on their investment into the movie, they may not see that paid back to them in a time in a manner which they would consider timely, you know.
Yeah,
like it'll take longer for them to make their money back.
And there's some people that look at the rating of the movie. Mm-hmm. Now, the nice thing about being in our adult ages, you know, over 18, is that you don't have to worry about the rating. Whatever the rating is,
right.
You're in that category, so you don't have to worry about that. But some people don't think that way.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, it's an R rating, so it's going to be really violent, and it's going to have all this bad language. Oh, it's going to be absolutely awful. I'm not going to see it. And these are people who are like 40, 50 years old.
Right.
And that's what they're probably thinking that they're going to be losing by getting the R rating. But they get a PG. Oh, it's PG-13. We can take a 50.
With that being said, and knowing that this is supposed to be an adult movie... Did you get that impression from the trailer?
Yes.
Yeah.
The trailer is... I liked it, but didn't like it all at the same time.
Right.
I really liked how it was put together, because the shots have this quick intercutting shots, but it wasn't... I almost
rhythm.
Don't want to say it's quick, because it's at a beat.
It has a rhythm,
right?
To it.
You know, it's going with the music that's playing and switching through it, And it's like just long enough to be like, I want to see more.
Mm-hmm.
And just short enough to be like, why can't I see more?
Right.
You know, it's enough to kind of draw my attention in, but then I want to keep my attention on that point and it moves on to something else, which can sometimes cause, you know, be like, I don't like it because I didn't get to see enough.
Yeah. I think my fear with this trailer is that I don't know if it does that good of a job of sort of like, okay, to me it's an interesting trailer for the same reason. I thought the trailer was put together very well. I liked the way it sort of had a right. beat and a rhythm to mm-hmm. it. I, of course, sort of knew the backstory. I knew that this was the trailer for the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So I knew that this movie, going into it, had a lot of buzz.
The first time I saw this, I had no clue.
Yeah. See, that
I was like, I have no idea. And then it said that it had Columbia Pictures right. presents
right.
the girl. And I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah.
And I kind of got excited because, you know, I'd been watching these podcasts. Mm. They kept mentioning The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I knew that the movie was coming out, that they were making it, that David Fincher was behind it. And so it kind of got me excited. The only thing is, it really doesn't represent anything about what the story is. And me not really knowing anything about the books, just that it's supposed to be really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of lost me on that front.
Okay.
I'm still excited to see it. I really want to go see it just to see what all the hullabaloo is about.
Right.
But the one nice thing about this is it doesn't have the same type of tones as like Titanic and Brokeback Mountain right now to me. So it's
hype,
not going to be put into my refuse to see because
there's hype, but not enough hype to make you not want to see it.
Or it has the right type of hype where people aren't just like repeating it over and over and over and over again, but they're like, oh, did you see? It just kind of comes up in conversation,
right?
But the trailer itself makes me want to go see it just because of how it was put together and the music, but not from what it's showing me, because I still have no idea. It's not pulling me in based off of what the movie's about,
right? And that's my fear. My fear is that yes, the trailer is unusual and sort of, you know, it makes you remember it because it's so, the way it hits is sort of very unusual. But again, it's one of those things like where I think a lot of people, when they're done seeing that, are going to be like, what the heck was that? Like, you know, like they're just confused, like not really getting it, because it doesn't really tell you at all what the movie is about. You see just flashes of things happening, and it's like,
maybe it's one of those things where it's like you see this trailer, so you get into your head The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo,
right?
And you're like, what the heck? And then it makes you want to find out more.
I don't want it to suffer the same sort of fate of like Sucker Punch. Like in Sucker Punch, when we saw those trailers, we were just kind of like, it looks interesting,
shiny.
But we have no clue what this movie is about. Now, that can work in your favor, because you could be like, I really want to know what this movie is about. But it doesn't have that visual sort of one-two punch that Sucker Punch had to make you go, this movie looks amazing. I have no idea what it's about. I must see it just to find out, like, what's the purpose of all this crazy atmospheric stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's my only fear. And I don't know if the book or the actual original movie have enough buzz to sort of carry people over into.
Yeah, and I think that's one reason probably why I'm excited, is because I did get that buzz. I was exposed to buzz pre-trailer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to get these two different perspectives on the matter. And it'll be pretty interesting to find out what exactly happens. I'm trusting David Fincher on this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be like, I really want to see this David Fincher movie, that this is probably going to be cool. And Daniel Craig also.
Right.
I mean, I don't think there's been a movie that I've seen Daniel Craig in that I didn't like.
Right.
Even Quantum of Solace. I kind of liked it. You know? It gave me the thrill ride. Yeah, sure. It wasn't one of the best Bond movies ever, but Casino Royale was awesome.
Yes, it was.
I'm really excited about Cowboys and Aliens coming up. So there's a lot of things that are good on this movie that I'm putting faith in.
Yes.
Could be a complete and utter piece of crap, but I'm going to assume the other
ones. It could be, but coming off of a movie like The Social Network, where it was a movie where I was like really confused. Like, I love David Fincher, but I have no idea how he's going to make an entertaining movie out of Facebook. Like, how could it possibly entertain me for more than an hour, you know, at all? So after going to see The Social Network and really enjoying it, and I love David Fincher movies. Seven is one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. Fight Club is one of my favorite movies. So he's got an amazing track record with me so far, even when I've doubted him with The Social Network. So now I'm like sort of jazzed, but I still want to see the original,
which is streaming on Netflix. Yes. And I have on Amazon Unbox. All right, so I think we basically go through all of our excitement. Yes, we did. Okay. So with that, Steven?
All right. Holy crap, my eyes hurt after watching that trailer. Golly, I just really felt like I was watching images from like one of those subliminal movie clips or something, you know, like where they're trying to show something in between. And I couldn't take my eyes off of it. And I was just like, what the hell is going on? But once I kind of got over that initial stuff, you know, truth be told, I don't really feel that I learned a whole lot about the movie. You know, it's hard to see if anything that happened in that trailer was actually in sequence, or if it was just random flashes that are supposed to get you interested. But I really couldn't decide what I liked or disliked about it. So, you know, it just really didn't do a whole lot for me. The one thing that actually did do a lot for me, though, was the music. And, you know, clearly that, you know, as it built up, the images got faster, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So the music actually got me really engaged in it and staring to kind of see if something was going to happen. But otherwise, you know, it didn't do a whole lot for me. I think clearly what I've realized is after hearing so much about it and looking around at different things, I'm either going to have to read the book or watch the Swedish version of the movie before I decide whether or not I'm going to go see this. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But, you know, that's my opinion. I'm sticking to it. So, but, you know, if it's something that you really like and you're definitely a book person, I'm sure that you'll get out there and watch it, and you know, we'll all see together if David Fincher can do a better job than anybody else can with this movie.
Okay. Again, I have no idea what's going to happen with that, but we'll see what happens. Anyways, Cutting Room Attractions, next week we're looking at... This is all your fault, isn't it?
Yes.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Should have that tomorrow from Netflix. followed by one that's not your fault, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Feel free to blame me for it, though.
Okay. You're okay with that. And then in the future, we're going to be checking out Abduction, which I have no idea about. Excited to see what the trailer brings me. So please, tell us what you think of these movies. Larry Crown, the trailer for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and Demolition Man on our website, AndyMac. I'm not working today. COLmovies.com. I was looking right at it, too. Go to our website, COLmovies.com. Comment on the blog. You can also email us by sending it to COLmovies@gmail.com. You can also please include a MP3 or AAC attachment. We'll put it on the show. Also, you can leave a voicemail for us at our Google Voice line at 361-265-8255. That's 361-COLTALK, COL Talk. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies, on Facebook at facebook.com/COLmovies. Also, please pop on iTunes, leave us a review, preferably 5 stars. We would very much appreciate it. And
we're not above begging.
And final thoughts, Stephen?
So, final thoughts. The only things I can really say is this week I was really kind of annoyed at Netflix. You know, because, you know, my bill went up about $3 a month, you know, about 6 months ago, and now it's going up $3 more. You know, I love you, Netflix, but, you know, please, please, please consider, you know, all of us who really do like the DVDs and stuff that we can't get on the site, streaming and all that. And, you know, and please don't go the route where the rumor mill is saying you're going, you know, when it comes to, you know, charging by the minute and all that kind of stuff. Please don't ever go that route. We love you like it is. But also, please remember the economy. we want to get out there and enjoy it, but it's tough to go to the movies, so we want to make it affordable if we can't watch stuff at the movies. And I guess, again, guys, I'm really sorry I couldn't be there this week. I really hope that things went well with the show and that this whole format that we're trying out here will actually work out. And I look forward to seeing you guys again, and I missed you guys. So, and thanks to everybody out there, and we'll talk to you soon.
I have no idea.
I really got not too much final thoughts. I'm still sort of riding the summer movie wave, so seeing where it takes us.
Yeah, we've got some good movies coming up here. We got the Harry Potters, and then we got the Captain America the following week, Cowboys and the Aliens. This is a good month.
Yeah,
it's a good month.
It's a good month.
We've got more throughout. It's going to kind of go off later off in the months. Conan the Barbarian, right before my birthday. What do you know? In any case, for that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, kid.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.